Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations. Today is Friday, August 25th, 2017, and I am Dave Hamilton sitting in for Jeff Gamet, who is off gallivanting today. My guests for this final episode of the week include Mr. Brian Chaffin. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Hey, that's me. Thanks for having me, man.
Yes, of course. And Mr. John Martellaro. How you doing, John?
The one and only. I'm here.
That you are. And we are
not to be confused with anybody else.
That's right. We're all the better for it. So we have two topics, as usual, to go through today. And our sponsor for this week is Eero at Eero.com, where coupon code TDO will get you free overnight shipping on one of our favorite mesh network products. So we'll talk a little bit more about that shortly. But first, John, yesterday you published a piece that said the iPhone 8 will be expensive and won't slow down Samsung. So I'm curious to hear you explain yourself, sir.
Wait, hold on. You made a mistake, Dave.
I did?
Yeah. John wrote a piece where he erroneously said that the iPhone 8 will be expensive and won't slow down Samsung. There, I fixed it for you.
Well, John, it looks like the game's on. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's on, Brian. So what I did was I looked at a parallel event, which was the battery issue with the Samsung Note 7. And Samsung took a pretty good hit on that, but that was a tragic safety issue. And then I contrasted that to the situation with Apple, where I think there's going to be some price sensitivity. And I looked at both sides of the coin there. I looked at how this is a premium product. It's top of the line. It's 10th anniversary. It has advanced technology. It's going to be worth some money, and Apple's going to charge it, set the price accordingly. But on the other hand, if Apple makes a blunder and sets the price too high, then it's just going to cause people to think about skipping a cycle and or buying one of the other phones. Because after all, how many people can afford a $1,500 phone? New York Times said sources reveal it might be $999 to start with. Add a little memory that suits you and you're looking at some serious money. So Apple's in a state of...
I'm going to correct you just because it's the way I am, John. You're talking about adding storage, not memory. Generally, the RAM on an iPhone is a fixed thing across all model sizes.
Thank you for clarifying
that. Of course,
that.
So, man. Yep.
So if Apple charges too much, they've got a problem. If they charge too little, that's a problem. And so they're going to be about right-sized, I suspect. And it's not going to do a whole lot price-wise to impact the sales.
Yeah.
So how does Apple gain market share on Samsung through features? No, because the camps are pretty well divided now, and they've chosen their sides. So the article said there really isn't any major element here, either massive switching or features or any special price consideration that would cause this phone, as nice as it is, to really take a bite out of Samsung.
Brian, you tend to disagree with Mr. Martellaro on this.
I do. First of all, I don't think Apple really cares about getting market share back from Samsung. And secondly, we have seen Apple steadily escalate the price of the iPhone, and it has always done really well, and it's always left Samsung way in the back of the pack, at least in terms of profits and margin.
Brian, steadily escalating the price from the ASPs I've seen every time Tim Cook does an earnings report, it's been pretty well locked in the low to mid 600s, has it not?
Yeah, the ASP has been, but the overall price of the iPhone itself has gone up, including from model to model, and then with the introduction of the Plus size. I think that if Apple is making a compelling product here, it's going to be popular, and it will further suck the wind out of Samsung's pretensions of being particularly relevant.
Supply, as these new hot phones always are. And we know there's some minor technical issues with this phone that may have slowed down the rollout, the persistent rumors about it being delayed. All the new iPhones are constantly.
So do you think that people are going to buy Samsung devices instead of this iPhone 8?
No, and I think there's equilibrium. That's my argument.
I mean, there's one thing to argue, John, that the iPhone 8 is going to be too expensive to. And don't get me wrong, $1,000 for a phone, it's a lot of money. I'm in no way trying to argue otherwise on that. It's one thing though to argue that it's so expensive that it's not going to be much of a needle mover. I could see one arguing that, but to say that this phone isn't going to blunt Samsung, that is where I end up having a problem. I think that this phone is going to capture mindshare, and it's going to capture the enthusiasm. It's going to be the aspirational device, and that's what Apple has always been really good at doing with the high end of their range. So that's the part that I'm quibbling about.
I disagree. I don't see it moving the needle that much. I mean, we can have hopes and aspirations that because it's special. I mean, Samsung phones have had OLED displays for a while. Apple and Samsung have been fighting it out and duking it out. The camps have made their stands and taken their sides, and there's churn back and forth. Switchers go both directions. I think I read in the December calendar quarter of 2016, each company sold about 76 million phones. You can make a list of features and do a comparison chart and say, oh wow, the iPhone blows it away. But then other people come out and they'll say, well, you know, there's these other features in the Samsung phone. And then you get into feature wars and the whole thing just kind of settles out.
But John, every year that we do that, Apple ends up being the profit leader and thought share, mind share leader. And they always have the phone to beat. And Samsung is always left in Apple's dust in terms of being perceived as making the best device. And I don't think that a high price tag is going to change that balance.
Didn't you write an article yourself just the other day about how Samsung's gaining on profit share?
Well, the article that I wrote yesterday, in fact, is that Samsung had more of a percentage of the profits than they have in the past. Apple's share of profits dropped from 84% down to 64%. Mm-hmm. And that Michael Walkley said that the Galaxy 8's introduction was a distortion and not a trend.
Mm-hmm.
And that Apple will recapture that share of the profits.
So worldwide, Android has about 80% market share over iOS. In terms of specific phones, Samsung has about twice the market share that Apple does worldwide.
Apple's down to 11% of the market.
Yeah, I think what was it? Samsung was 22 specifically. And then Huawei and all the other Android phones make up the rest. Is that right?
Yes.
So again, I just don't see any evidence that even though this is going to be a special phone for Apple fans, that it can make big headway in changing the state of competition between the two companies.
Well,
show me the evidence.
Okay. First of all, this is like the same argument every year, and it's like finally this time Apple's going to screw up. All the other times we said Apple's going to screw up, fine, they didn't, but this time Apple's just going to have a whole home device. But I mean, the reality is that I don't think it's. You said we may actually be on the same side of this.
I think you guys are agreeing here. I mean, John's saying it's not going to slow down Samsung, which is true. That's never happened in previous years. But also what's never happened in previous years is for Apple to release a dud, right? I mean, for Samsung
to slow down Apple.
For Samsung, correct. That's right. Yeah, yes.
True.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of talk last year about, oh, my gosh, headphone jack, yada, yada. And there's still some people that whine about it. And occasionally I'm one of them, like when I want to plug something into my phone and I don't have the dongle with me. It's a curious choice by Apple, but it's certainly it was the thing last year. And it was like, oh, nobody's going to buy this thing. OK, fine. People still bought it.
Maybe you and I are vehemently agreeing with each other.
I think you are. Yes, vehemently. Yes,
I can go with that.
Yeah. Well, that's good because it's time for me to tell you about Eero. Eero is the mesh system that we tend to prefer most here. They are the most mature consumer-based Wi-Fi mesh system in that they've been around for a few years. And what that means is they've been able to really perfect this product. They just came out with Generation 2 of their mesh offering, which includes a new Gen 2 device that looks a lot like the Gen 1 device. In fact, it looks exactly like it, except it's got some new guts in it. And then they've also come out with their Beacon, which is an entirely new form factor. It plugs right into the wall. You don't have to worry about where to place it. You just plug it into a wall outlet and that's where it sits. The Gen 2 Eero has three radios now. One 2.4 gigahertz radio and now two 5 gigahertz radios. That extra 5 gigahertz radio can be used for one of a number of things, or actually multiple of a number of things, including backhaul between all of your Eeros, the communication that they do with each other, and also for front haul to allow more devices to connect simultaneously, giving you the ability to really kind of stream things. If you've got multiple Netflix connections happening simultaneously in your home, that can make a really big deal. The Beacon actually only has two radios, but they've tweaked some of the stuff in there that make it about 30% faster than the original Eero. So this is the model to get. I've tested it here. I've actually got Eero Gen 2 with two beacons running in my office. It's stellar. It's the coverage is great. It actually goes much further than I ever expected it to. I've got an Eero set up at my dad's house and it gets all the way. He's got a river like way behind his house. I never got Wi-Fi signal back there before. Now with Eero, I can actually sit on the bench by the river and get on Wi-Fi. Maybe that's not the best place to be connected, but sometimes you need to be and you want to have that range. There you go. Here's a deal for you, though. If you go to Eero.com, Eero.com, and plug in select whatever model you want, choose overnight shipping. It's going to offer to charge you for that, but you are going to have the special TDO code that you plug in and it takes that price all the way down to zero. So you get free overnight shipping. Add overnight shipping, put in the TDO code that will take the price down to zero for overnight shipping at Eero.com, at Eero.com. Our thanks to Eero for sponsoring this episode. Brian, I'd like you to send us off on the weekend telling us about a pretty cool thing called Twistron. Would you please?
Twistron! It's very space age.
Yeah.
Very space age. Man, I am so excited about this stuff, Dave. Twistron is, researchers have announced it. So this isn't a shipping product per se. I think there's some cost issues that need to be addressed. This isn't going to be like winding up on your clothes sometime soon. But what it is, it's a yarn made out of carbon nanotubes. And what it does is generate electricity when it stretches. It just generates electricity when it stretches. So you're saying to yourself, well, what do we need that for? Well, certainly you can do stuff like bake it into clothes so that your clothes can power sensors. That was actually one of the things that these scientists targeted very specifically, low power stuff.
Does it snap back after you stretch it?
I don't know if it snaps back.
Well, I mean, if it only produces electricity when you stretch it, then you've got one shot.
My understanding is that you stretch it, and then if it comes back together again, and then you stretch it again, it's going to generate some electricity.
Okay. That's keep on stretching it over and over. It has a life cycle.
Yes. And, but think bigger than smart clothes, because this could be a way to harness the power of waves. And one of the stats that I found for the article I put together is that it's estimated that there's some 6 trillion watt hours that hit the world's coasts every 2 hours. And that would be enough to do 5 million U.S. homes. You know, U.S. homes, the most energy consumptive homes on the planet, 5 million homes for a year. And this is happening every 2 hours. So, I mean, you can just, I mean, like this has been, I remember reading science fiction stories back when I was a kid about wave generators. And so we've known about concepts like this for a long time. The problem is that it's really hard to do because waves beat the crap out of everything. Right. I mean, it's a lot of energy. That's the whole point of it. It's a lot of energy. So, you know, I know that there are different projects around the world to try to learn how to do this and make it better. But it's, you know, far from anything that makes any kind of sense yet. Well, this is the kind of product that can make that sort of thing possible. Or like, what if elevators were generating some of their own power every time they were just used?
Yeah, I mean, so the idea
is how much electricity you can get out of a cable. And
No. I'm not saying that you can power all the I'm saying that what if electricity elevators were generating some of their own power?
I mean, you can't. I mean, the conservation of energy law says that. I mean, we don't have perpetual motion, right?
No, well, I think what Brian is saying is when the elevator descends,
it's waste energy right now.
If we're using energy, some of that braking
is not being,
that braking energy. Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there are all kinds of ways this can be used from on the small scale, like clothes that power their own sensors, or maybe even clothes that are powering your devices eventually, if this could be scaled in that kind of way. Again, the big thing to me, this really hones in on the stories that I was reading as a kid, the thing with the waves. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff that can be done with this. And it is, I mean, what I said in the piece is that I am firmly convinced that the only reason why we don't have jetpacks and flying cars is because this product was just now invented.
I do want to bring up a point that this is a really cool technology. But the first thing I thought of when you wrote in the article about tides was that there has to be some analysis about the impact of extracting energy from the planet, whether it's wind power. I always wondered about wind power. You know, if you change the course of the wind by pulling too much energy out of the wind, does that have an effect on the climate? And I saw an article last year where it said they're starting to look into that. And in some cases, it can have a small effect. So there's no infinite joy in extracting energy from the tides, because the tides impact the rotation of the planet, the slowdown. You know, you could conceivably get to the point where you extract too much energy from the wind and the oceans and you mess up the planet's ecosphere. So
you don't want to send it on a off tilt.
Well, you might change the rotation speed, which might affect the climate and our clocks.
Could we really impact the rotation speed, you think?
Well, you know, as we get into these technologies more and more, and we're doing so, there'll come a time. I mean, there was probably a time in the 1940s and 50s when we thought we could never pump enough CO2 into the atmosphere to affect our lives and planet-wide atmosphere. So it could happen if it gets too popular and too global.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
This is deep rabbit hole.
I know. Return from subroutine.
But no, you make a fair point. And in particular, there are all kinds of habitats that it turns out they actually depend on the way things actually work now. So, we start changing that stuff and there could be negative repercussions. And we probably could never, ever in a million years actually harness all of the power from all of the tides and the waves.
You know, I used to say I could never fill up my hard drive, Brian. I hesitate to say that we can't.
I accept your admonishment with glee, because you're absolutely right. But if we could harness some of that power.
Sure.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. The question is, can we stop ourselves when we get to harnessing the right amount?
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Fun stuff, though. It's, I mean, this is
the answer is no, by the way. We can't. We are incapable.
That's a fair point.
We're just humans. It's after all, it's in our nature.
Yeah. We'll be a class one civilization for a long time, Dave.
Yeah, that's right. All right, folks. Well, that is how we're going to send you off to your weekend this week. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Hey, man. Thanks for having us. Fun stuff.
Yeah. And John, thank you, too.
Oh, you're very welcome. Pleasure.
Folks, we will see you next week. If you have any thoughts, make sure to send them in to observations@macobserver.com or visit us on Twitter @TMO Daily. We'll see you next time.